Good morning, and thank you for joining us for another Capital Link Shipping Sector webinar. Today's focus is going to be dry bulk shipping, and I'm excited to be here. My name is Greg Lewis, and I'll be moderating today's panel. I guess what we'd say is we've always found the dry bulk shipping sector fascinating, owing to the many cross currents that drive demand and really the outlook for the space. And it's really, it has an intricate web around global trade. Everybody's familiar with the large Capesize vessels that are industrial monsters that move things like iron ore from major producers to consumer to end markets. But you know what? What's interesting to us about dry bulk is, it really is a global trade with, some vessels going to dropping off cargoes at ports that don't even have infrastructure. It's pretty fascinating. So I'm excited. Before we begin, just a quick disclaimer. We just want to let the audience know that, these webinars are for informational and educational purposes only. They do not constitute investment advice, or I guess advice of any kind. As always, please feel free to submit your questions using the button or the bottom of the screen, or shoot us an email at questions@capitallink.com. And we'll do our best to try to work some of those questions into the dialogue and into the conversation. And before we dive in, I guess I'll just introduce the panel really quick. We have Aristides Pittas, who heads up Euroseas and EuroDry. His family's been in the shipping industry for generations. Definitely a strong knowledge base. We have from Golden Ocean, we have Petter Simonsen, who is the acting CEO and CFO of one of the larger dry bulk companies in the world. From Safebulkers, we have Dr. Luca Bomparis, who's a good friend of mine. And of course, we have from Seanergy and United Maritime, Stamatis Tsantanis, who has really grown that company fairly quickly, through good and bad cycles. With that, I guess we'll kick it off. Maybe Petter, for you, we'll start off, just as I see you on the top right corner. Clearly, everyone in the U.S., we just had the election. We're hearing lots about tariffs and what that impact is going to be, if it's going to be any impact. It seems like there's always a lot of questions and fears that sometimes do or do not materialize. Just kind of curious on your views as you think about, the potential for tariffs to impact the dry bulk trade. Just kind of, any high level views you have around that.
Yeah, no, I think, the tariffs, potential tariffs on the cargoes that we carry, which is mostly bauxite and iron ore, is extremely limited in the sense that the U.S. don't really export a lot of those, the volumes that we transport. There is some coal volumes coming out, but I think it will have a very limited impact. It will have an impact on sentiment, and it has had an impact on sentiment, and you've seen that on the forward curve, on the FFA curve, and also in the stock market. Noise creates sort of risk-off situation, and when you have wars and unrest sort of in different kinds of the world, that adds to that sort of situation. But then again, tariffs, we're talking about China, that will, they will not demand less commodities, so they will try to source commodities elsewhere. And normally that is for shipping ton-mile intensive. So we're not worried, and we don't really think that's going to impact our market, at least not for the big ships.
Yeah, no, I kind of, that is kind of what I was expecting here. So that's good. I mean, Luca, just because, you have some of, you have some smaller vessels that maybe move grain. Has this kind of impacted, I want to say the last time tariffs impacted the grain trade, it really drove a lot of strength from South America, where, Asia was replacing a lot of cargoes. Is that kind of how you're thinking about it? Any kind of views on, what maybe some tariffs could mean around the U.S. grain trade, which I believe is one of the larger, larger exporters, in the world? Luca, I think you're muted.
Yeah, I'm muted. Yes. Okay. So yes, I mean, because dry bulk, I mean, it has all these commodities which are quite specific, like grain, coal, or iron ore. And as Peter said, I don't expect that there will be a substantial increase, although the climate can change. And as probably we all understand, is that I mean, people will continue to eat and use grains, and will continue to import. And most of the most important issue is the health of the Chinese economy, rather than the tariffs themselves, because the tariffs could basically be imposed in exporting commodities from China. Rather than, let's say, when they want to import grains or coal or I don't know. So I don't believe there will be an influence. And in any case, if there is an influence in other sectors, that could be limited in 1 or 2 years from now. And let's wait until to see what will happen in the next period, and what will be the actual tariffs, instead of making any expectations on what will be the result.
Now
I say something.
Muted. great. Thanks you for that. Go ahead, Aristides.
I just wanted to say that, you know, geopolitics always have very surprising effects on shipping. The tariffs, for example, the first thing that Trump said is that he will impose tariffs on Mexico and Canada, which are the neighboring countries. Who knows what that might mean for bringing cargo from further away into the US? So it's a very, very difficult to predict how things would develop. The only thing that can be said with quite a big certainty is that all these disruptions are usually good for shipping, because somehow they increase ton miles, waiting times, congestion, all these things. So I'm, despite the fear that tariffs might, you know, result in a slower growth worldwide, which is a negative, obviously, I think that all this disruption might end up being more positive than we think. I just wanted to make this point.
Yeah, great. No, thank you for that. And yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And clearly, disruptions, you know, tend to absolutely benefit, you know, and all shipping industries. You know, we are going to eventually, for those in the audience, dive into some kind of more traditional things that people talk about. I just wanted to address these things. And the other thing I wanted to kind of kick off, because I did think it was important to address it at the beginning, is, you know, it's interesting to us, as kind of you've seen this big push by China on the electrical vehicle side, and what that, while that's kind of a negative for oil demand, you know, electric cars run on electricity. And electricity in China is generated by lots of different things, including coal. So, you know, Stamatis, just, you know, as I think about, you know, some of your vessels that I know are moving coal, you know, I'd be curious on your thoughts as you think about that, and what that impact could mean around the coal trade. And then after that, if anybody else wants to dive in with thoughts around, you know, kind of the benefits around to dry bulk at the, you know, what that means in the electrification of really the transportation industry. But Stamatis, please go ahead.
Well, whether we like it or not, and we don't overall, there's about 200 gigawatts of new building power plants that will be delivered in the next few years that are coal-fired power plants. And as I mentioned before, whether we like it or not, there will continue to be a lot of coal in the market, but not just China. We see a lot of coal going into India, and we take a lot of coal to India, not only from Australia, which is a shorter distance, but also from the US, which now with the closure of the Red Sea, it has become a super long haul that we do all the time from Baltimore to West Coast India. So we do that a lot, and we don't really see coal going away. On the contrary, the ton mile of coal is getting more and more, higher and higher. So we're optimistic. I don't see that happening anytime soon. I mean, you know, coal being removed from the market as a source of energy. On the contrary, we believe that coal will continue to increase in the next few years.
If I may add something here, any change or any reduction in coal should not be expected before let's say, at least 10 to 15 years from now. I don't believe that there will be some dramatic change in the near future, which they call demand is dictated by other things. Of course, gradually, we all know that by 2050, we'll be more green, and maybe there will be less coal, but this will not happen in the next, let's say, 5 or 10 years. It could happen, I mean, in about 2035 or 2040. So there is substantial time ahead of us.
I can also add that, you know, one thing that has the EV industry in China has contributed with as well is on the bauxite trade from West Africa. We've seen that the bauxite trade has grown dramatically, 22% year on year over the last 5 years, to become a massive contributor to ton mile. It's now representing around 15% or 12 to 15% of ton mile globally for Capes. And I think Stamatis and I, at least on the big ships, are enjoying that very much. So I think there's the EV industry is at least on the margin very positive for the dry side on the big ships.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating. You know, I always kind of, when I started looking at bauxite years ago, you know, obviously it's big in aluminum, and then, you know, you realize that, you know, some battery metal or semiconductor matter, gallium, which I had never heard of, is a key component of bauxite. And, you know, it kind of explains why, you know, China's buying a lot of it. It is interesting. And just on that, you know, as we think about, you know, just because I think probably, you know, most people on this call are very familiar with the iron ore trade and very familiar with the coal trade. Obviously, Brazil and Australia are major exporters of that, of iron ore and coal. Obviously, there's some other countries. You know, anyone have any kind of like walk us through a little of like the gallium? You know, who you know, we mentioned West Africa. Like, where is that bauxite coming from? And as we look at it, you know, could we see? You know, it's very easy for us to go out and see what Petrobras is doing and, oh, hey, they're going to increase iron ore capacity X percent this year. Any kind of broad strokes around, you know, what type of bauxite supply growth we could see, you know, in any time frame, 1, 2, 3 years?
I think we've seen most of the major growth in the bauxite trade already. The bauxite comes, I think, around 85% from Guinea in West Africa. And that is a China-owned and controlled value chain of bauxite, where they control both the mine, the infrastructure, and also, you know, the takeout in China. So it's very much a pipeline. So that's going to continue to flow. I think we're looking around 5 to 10% growth on the bauxite next year, but that is very much in a very steady demand. But I don't think we're going to see a massive growth in the ton mile contribution for the bauxite beyond those 5-10%.
No, okay, great.
Greg, can I say something? Not on the bauxite, because Peter said it very correctly. You know, Clarksons has a very similar views with what Peter just said, and they do a very thorough analysis. But just for the audience here, who obviously fear, you know, what is happening with coal, I want to also add my 5 cents on what already both Lucas and Stamatis said. The energy requirements worldwide are increasing tremendously. And that is why coal is going to continue to be needed as much as it is. It won't decline shortly. We are making great strides in the green energy, but this doesn't suffice. And the need to produce electricity, to power electrical vehicles, to power data centers, to power AI, all that huge amounts of energy cannot be provided yet by the green energy sector. So I think it's important for people to understand that coal will be around for many, many more years. I just wanted to say that myself as well.
No, and I think you kind of hit on a good point. Why you know, hey, as much as people, coal's been around for over 100 years for a reason. And it's interesting, you know, we were doing some work on some solar, and hey, it's great that in the US they're adding, you know, on a capacity basis, 5 to 6% capacity from solar this year. The problem is that utilization factor is so low that it isn't 5 or 6%, it's like 1 to 2. So no, absolutely. I think, you know, whether it's coal or natural gas, those are going to be around for a very long time. I did want to touch on, I think it was some, I forget what one, somebody in the audience, I mean, one of you guys in your remarks commented on the Red Sea, commented on disruptions. You know, I think there's a lot of expectations, you know, and we'll kick this off maybe with Aristides and then go to Luca. You know, as you guys think about, and I mentioned Aristides just because, you know, you've in across your shipping, you know, you have dry bulk, you also have other assets that are probably looking there. You know, hey, that's great that, you know, you're hearing about, you know, hey, let's, you know, God willing, there'll be peace, you know, around, you know, a resolution in the Israel, Gaza conflict. But, you know, as we think about that, you know, it's interesting with drones, you know, how it's kind of been, you know, enabled the Red Sea to really be a touch zone, a challenge. And I guess really kind of what I'm wondering is, you know, even if things do resolve in an expedient manner here, you know, it only takes, you know, one bad person with a drone to kind of create real issues in a place like the Red Sea. So I'm just kind of curious, you know, Aristides, you know, just given you as you manage your fleet, you know, how you're thinking about that, and maybe also, like, you know, what are, you know, obviously everything we do is insured nowadays. You know, what are insurance companies kind of telling you about that?
Well, let me first say that a resolution, if it happens, obviously will result in more trade going back through the Suez Canal, which will be a negative. I think that for dry bulk, people estimate it might change, you know, the supply of ships by less than 1%. So it's not going to be a huge effect, because we haven't seen the major issues in the dry bulk market. The container market, which is the other market we are very much involved with, has been much more affected, and there's been a reduction by at least 70% of the container vessels going through Suez. On dry bulk, it's much, much less. And there, what surprises me really is the big container liners like Maersk and CMA and MSC and the One and all these big container liners. They are taking ships on charter starting from mid-2025 to mid-2026, and they are chartering big periods from now. All these people expect that this difficult situation will most probably continue one way or the other. I'm saying that because, you know, there are big companies that do a lot of research and analysis. Myself, from what I read, I also think that we will not see a surprise fast improvement in this thing. I mean, what happened in Syria now, in my mind, is no guarantee that things will get better in Syria. Probably they will get worse, and more there will be more infighting. So I think the probabilities are that we will continue to see a very difficult situation in the area, and very few vessels going through the Suez Canal. Even Clarkson's, up till a quarter ago, they calculated their 2025 and 26 budgets and forecasts based that there would be a resolution. Now, even they are saying, well, we don't see a resolution in 2025, and our base case is that we will have this issue hanging around. So If it corrects, it will have a slightly negative effect, obviously, in us, but I really doubt that we will see things getting better.
No, that's great, great for that. And you know, I guess, you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about iron ore. I mean, obviously it's the biggest trade in dry bulk and obviously a major driver. You know, I guess Stamatis, you know, just as you think about the iron ore trade here, you know, I would argue 2024, there was a bit of a surprise, positive surprise, which has kind of helped lift Capes and the overall indices higher. Just kind of curious, you know, how, you know, what was interesting in 24 and how you're kind of thinking about, you know, the outlook for iron ore, which, you know, maybe is a little bit more challenging here as we head into 25. But, you know, hey, we live in a world of optionality, I guess we'll just say.
Well, thanks, Greg. Well, first of all, it was not only 2024, but also 2023. So we had 2 years of very big increase in trade of iron ore and also steel exports out of China. So the fact that a lot of real estate companies in China went bankrupt or under this kind of, you know, resolution and all that did not really affect the iron ore trade or the steel trade. However, we're seeing now in Q4 of 2024 that there has been a slowdown both in the imports because iron ore inventories in China are quite high, and also the steel mills have stopped producing or have decreased production because of the negative margins. I believe that this is a wait and see approach, a way to see what the actual you know, benefit is going to come from the Chinese government in respect of all these announcements that they have made, but they have not really followed through. So once we have this benefit out of the Chinese government, the stimulus being unleashed, I strongly believe that the Chinese, the steel trade and the iron ore trade is going to come back to normal at a much higher degree. The positive sign that we saw the last 2 years for iron ore is the fact that it has been somewhat disassociated from the Chinese housing market. There's so many infrastructure projects in the world. You have Middle East, you have all these areas in the world with big infrastructure projects. Hopefully now the US is going to have a big infrastructure project. You will have the reconstruction of the countries that have been destroyed by wars. So I cannot think of better fundamentals in the long run as far as iron ore and steel is concerned. I strongly believe that the current slowdown is a wait and see cautious approach coming from, you know, what the stimulus of the Chinese government is going to happen. And then we expect to see a much better trade coming back into the picture.
Great. And before we go maybe to the minor bulks, Petter, you know, just given your fleet makeup, do you have anything else you want to mention on the iron ore trade?
Yeah, no, I fully agree with Stamatis. And I think also we've seen Vale, the Brazilian miner, you know, actually meeting their guidance this year for the first time. So, and they said also in their calls that they're now focusing more on quality than quantity and in the end of the year, which means that they have come down to around 700,000 tons per day, which is you know, almost half of what they were peaking at in October, November. So I think it's very natural that the sort of the slowdown comes from a very active year. But I don't think either then that Chinese imports and appetite for iron ore will slow down. I think it will be used in different places than the traditional construction sector. And I think the main sort of change that we see now is that there is a ton mile effect of sourcing of iron ore, high grade iron ore, from further away than what they've seen before. We see the Chinese sourcing more from Brazil. We have also big project, the Simandou, coming on stream out of Guinea, which is going to be a game changer for the market. It's going to triple the distance compared to Australia. And if it those volumes, 120 million tons, will replace domestic production, then it will just add 120 million tons to the market. But if we say that they will replace Australia, which is not unlikely given the Chinese sort of sourcing of reliable from reliable sources and not Western sources, which I think you see shift towards. It's going to triple sailing distance for Capes, and we see also that the Chinese are really aggressively buying ships, older ships, in order to secure the transportation of those volumes these days. Winning being one of the partners in the Simandou project. It's also a partner in the bauxite trade, which we now see. They are also continuing to buy a lot of ships for this trade going forward. So I think it's fundamentally very positive, both on the demand and supply side.
Yeah, no, and I just, one more thing on iron ore before we kind of move on. One of the things that I've been picking up from a few people was that actually, just given China's infrastructure around iron ore, it's almost become like a waypoint where maybe they're, you know, you look at that headline import volumes of iron ore, and then you realize that they're then exporting some of that iron ore regionally. Is there any validity to that, or is that maybe just some wishful thinking by some, you know, bullish people on dry bulk? Is that something anyone's picked up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very complex picture. Firstly, there's the iron ore. I mean, we've seen throughout the year that iron ore has been imported despite rising inventories. And for what reason are those inventories rising? There's, you know, a lot of different theories on it. One is that it's a lot of the iron ore is of lower quality. And we know that they are using blending facilities in China to export iron ore. Not just also for, I mean, this is miners and the traders are having their own facilities there. We know that there's new rules on the Dalian Metals Exchange that require on-site ore deposits to be able to trade the iron ore over the metals exchange, and so on. So there's both trade in iron ore, and there's obviously trade in steel, which has benefited the super segment and ultras this year.
So, but kind of like a little bit of a hub. I mean, there is a little bit of hub and spoke going on with China as a launching point. That's fascinating. Luke, I did want to talk to you a little bit about you know, just given your fleet mix and you know what you're seeing. You know, maybe if you want to touch on the minor bulks or the grains. You know, like as you think about 2024. You know, what kind of, it was an interesting year where, you know, for a couple of years, the smaller vessels, you know, significantly outperformed on a relative basis Capes. You know, I would argue 24 was really a return of normalcy where kind of the ultras were, or this, I'm old, so I'll just call them handies. The handies were here, the Panamaxes were here, and the Capes were here. You know, I guess I'm kind of curious, you know, how you're thinking about, you know, that mid-sized market going forward, and really, you know, what are you excited about on the commodity side?
Yes, one point on the previous discussion about iron ore is that Capes also have which basically transport iron ore, have an extremely low order book for the following years. And the reason for that is that they have become so expensive. So basically, there is no economics on investing in a Cape right now because the IRR of the investment will be very, very small. Now, I mean, for us, we observed the 2024 year, which was overall good. What we have done is that we had a very good market until recently for the medium-sized vessels, Panamax to post-Panamax. And we took also opportunities to expand our charter hires in Capes. And we have, as you are aware, 8 Capes in total. In the past, we used to have only 3. And we bought this additional 5 Capes at very low, let's say, during COVID period at very low prices. So we're quite happy because even at this market, we have, let's say, ahead of us 2 years charter highs for the Capes. with an average, let's say, of $24,000-$25,000 per day. So we don't. We are more curious what will happen in the other markets. I mean, in the medium-sized vessels. What we see is that the competition is expanding also, and there is also energy efficiency vessels are playing a more important role, because as you are aware, we have already ordered about 18 phase 3 medium-sized vessels, and we have taken delivery of 11. So when the market is, let's say, 10,000, I mean, what it is maybe right now, we can easily get 13,000, 30% more in the more efficient vessels. And also the program that we have implemented in relation to improvement of energy efficiency has gone very well, because basically we have completed these improvements, and also we can get premiums in relation to energy efficiency on in most of our fleet. So I think that what we're going to see, despite the ups and downs of the markets, I mean, iron ore is expected to grow, let's say, 0.5% next year and until 2026. So there are various expectations. Sometimes coal is lower. I mean, it will not disappear, as we said. It will continue. Grain will continue. So I think that the game changer here is how you can prepare your company to be able to get the additional costs which are related to, or the benefits which are related to energy efficiency transition in all sectors.
Super helpful. Thanks for that. Aristides, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I answer a little bit your question on the smaller sizes. We've been quite active in the Ultramax sector lately, having bought four vessels last year, having placed an order this year for two new Ultramaxes. Firstly, I have to say that, you know, I agree with Lucas that we're seeing this upgrading of the vessels, and fuel efficiency has become more important. So we are buying ships post 2014, which were more economical, and even new builds that are even more economical than the first generation of the eco vessels. And we will be scrapping and selling our elder vessels as time goes by. And I think most of the companies here are following a very similar thing. But on the coming back to the Ultramaxes, we've seen this year that they have outperformed Panamaxes, for example, quite substantially, which happens usually for a very brief moments of time due to imbalances. But this time it's happening really, really strongly, and it's persistent. And I think it has to do with the fact that the biggest growth in dry bulk trade comes from Asia and India, and areas where they don't have the bigger ports to get the biggest vessels, and and you see minor bulk trade growing at a faster pace, and this is set to continue. So I do feel that, you know, the places that need attention can only take Ultramaxes, and even you see people investing in new handy sizes, the 40,000 deadweight ships these days, because there is this need, and there will continue to be this need with ships that can discharge the cargo on their own and in smaller parcels. So we've seen this change, obviously, in a longer trend. You know, the smaller ships will earn less than the bigger ships, but now this can go on for quite some time, just because of the type of cargoes.
Yeah, no doubt. And go ahead, Stamatis.
Well, to be honest, I'm a little bit concerned of the order book in Kamsarmaxes and Ultramaxes, and the reason is that we expect to have 700 new ships coming in the water in 2025 and 2026, That's a big amount of ships. But the worst part of this order book is not the new ships coming in, which are, of course, better and more efficient, is that you don't see the older ships exiting the market. So it's a segment where you see older ships still operating, 2008, 2005, 2004, they still compete. It's not like the Capesizes where, you know, automatically when you hit 19, 20 years old, you're out of the system completely. You know, you cannot compete with anyone. You just do like 25%. The older Kamsarmax and Ultramax, they continue to trade among everybody else. They may lose like 20% of the fleet. So people don't scrap them.
Yeah.
And we have
Stamati, if I may.
It's amazing how strenuous hauling iron ore can be on a haul. But I'm sorry, Aristides, go ahead, please.
No, I just wanted to say that Stamatis is right. This has been the case, but the Panamax and the Supramax fleet has become much older, and they haven't been scrapped because the markets were good. But with this correction that we've seen this last quarter in the market, and if this persists within the next 3 to 6 months, I'm sure that we will start seeing a lot of scrapping, especially on the Supramax area, where most of the vessels, when they are checked against their CII numbers, they fare very poorly. So we will see more scrapping of those vessels, and us and most of the guys here on the panel that are have placed orders for new ships and have newer ships, they should be okay once we get over this slow period that we're seeing today.
No doubt. Now, it's funny. I could go on, but I do have to address some questions from the audience, and I know we're kind of, we can't go on all day. I know everyone has lives they need to get back to, but it's interesting, right? I mean, like, it's funny. People look at 2024. Hey, the BDI's had a good year, right? Cape rates are up, 20-30%. Smaller vessel classes are up 10-15%. But it's interesting, right? I mean, definitely some of the audience wants to know. And maybe each of you, if you just kind of, get a few sentences, I guess the one question that we're getting is, why has the BDI been so weak recently? I'm sure there's some seasonality around that right now, but Luca, I don't know if you want to kick off just, with a couple thoughts on why you think it's been weak.
Just to say a comment on what Aristides said just before. Imagine that about 20% of the fleet is of the Panamax to Kamsarmax fleet is maybe more than 20 years. Many vessels will go from now until 2027. They have dry dockings of 20 years. You need to have a reason in order to go and scrap your vessel. And the reason is not a good market. The reason is maybe an expensive dry docking, which is ahead of you. So there is a huge fleet that is going to undertake dry dockings in the next 2 years. The second point that we also need to consider that all these vessels that we're talking about, they will be classified this year in the various environmental categories. And so you will see vessels which will be A, B, C, D, but you will also see many vessels which will be E. And maybe charters will not be willing to charter these vessels. So even now, the economics of all the vessels or less efficient vessels are not working very well. So let's see how, there will be a correction, but let's see how the correction will evolve. So there is a good a benefit for the well-prepared companies.
Great. Pat?
Yeah. So yeah. I think we have touched upon it earlier. Recently, I think we've seen, first of all, it's very, very sort of sentiment-driven market. So we've seen that all throughout the year, it's been financial players driving the FFA curve. We recently saw one big hedge fund, being taken out with a huge loss on the Cape trade. Fundamentally, I think Brazil have slowed down their activity on their exports. They have gone from, as I mentioned, 1.1, 1.2 down to now below 7,000 daily exports, and that has a huge impact on the Atlantic market. We also seen some disruptions, some disputes with the Emirates on the bauxite trade with Guinea on VAT or some fees. So there's been some slight disruptions right now. I think the Atlantic is filling up with ships, so I think it's going to be a while until that starts to unwind, especially if you see some slower growth in the exports as you seasonally see this time of year.
Modest.
Well, the reason why we're seeing the slowdown now is that we have had the unwinding of the congestion. So you have zero congestion, almost zero congestion all over the world. We used to have the grain corridor. We used to have the Panama Canal. We used to have disruptions in China. We used to have the arbitrage opportunities in South America for the smaller ships. Now this is not happening, where the shippers were, they prefer to pay the demurrage instead of and keeping the ships there. So we had a lot of congestion. Now there's no congestion and all the ships are out there operating. That has increased the effective fleet supply across the board, especially on Kamsarmaxes, and Ultramaxes, which now has been cannibalizing the Capes because they're splitting cargoes. So when you have, let's say, for example, the Cape size is at 25,000 and the Panamax, Kamsarmax are 8, they would split the cargoes and automatically we would get more effective supply on the Kamsarmax. So that has temporarily driven the market down because the effective supply is higher. And we will revert back to the normalized congestion rates, hopefully in Q1, hopefully when we know what the tariffs are going to look like, because that's contingent on the tariffs a lot. So when we have more information about how is that going to play out, I believe we're going to move towards the historical congestion averages, and that is going to normalize the market. So that's in my opinion, the key in this.
Okay, great. And then just, I realize we only have a few minutes left. I mean, I guess real quick, each of you, I'd be curious, what are you most optimistic about in 25, and what's your wild card, and what's your risk? Aristides, I don't know if you want to kick us off.
Well, okay. I'm really not very optimistic, to be honest, about next year. I'm not too pessimistic either, but I do see a very balanced supply and demand situation moving into the next year and 2026. We will continue our policy of renewing our fleet, because we are very confident that, especially if the market is bad, we will see a lot of scrapping and a lot of ships having to exit the market, which will lead to the next bull run. But I don't see the next bull run most probably in 2025.
Great, Petter.
I think that the next year for the Capes, we have the bauxite, which will continue to add the ton mile to the Capes. I think that's going to grow by 5 to 10% next year, which equals a ton mile growth of around 1.3%, and when you have a fleet growth next year gross of 1.8%. On the Capes, I think that's a very sort of attractive proposition. On the risk side, I think the Kamsars and the Panamaxes looked a little bit challenging. But as you say, Stamatis, they are running at absolute full efficiency at the moment. And normally that is not the case. And normally they are also very much correlated with this, with the Capes. So I'm optimistic for the Capes, but a little bit cautious on the Panamaxes and Kamsars.
Great, thank you for that, Luca.
Yes, I would agree with these comments. I believe that we need to see how the situation will settle in relation to tariffs and the global trade and the global GDP and the settlement of wars, etc. And so we be cautious, at least for the first half of 2025. However, as we see, as we have said, additional factors like energy efficiency and how this is implemented by the companies will play an important role. We have done the most of the biggest part of our renewal because we have sold about 14 ships and we have ordered 18 new build vessels phase three, which we have taken already delivery 11 of them, and still in the next couple of years we take seven more. So basically, I think that the companies need to do their own homework and maintain a good capital structure, be consistent with their investors, trying not to be over-levered, and do the renewal when it is needed. And I think that this will be paid back in the next, within the next or the coming year, 2026.
Great. Hey, and shareholder returns, I think every investor on this call absolutely likes those. Stamatis, I don't know if you want to close this out, please.
Yeah, very quickly, I agree with Peder. We have some amazing supply fundamentals on the Capesizes. Very good news is that 2025 is going to be the peak year in repairs, maintenance, and dry dockings, because the majority of the fleet has been delivered in 2010. Now, a lot of ships, I remember, like 3,500 ships, will undergo special survey dry docks in 2025. It's going to be amazing news for the supply of vessels. That's going to keep up a lot of tonnage in the dry docks, especially in the Far East. So that's hopefully is going to be very, very helpful for the market. Capesizes, amazing supply fundamentals, as I mentioned before. Wild card is the Red Sea. If the Red Sea reopens, the Capesizes will be affected a lot, because at any given time, at least 10% or 15% of the global Capesize fleet is supposed to go through the Red Sea. So that has helped the market a lot. So that's my two cents about it.
Greg, can I say one final thing before Absolutely. We close? Because we didn't touch upon stock valuations, and we are all listed companies. All listed companies here. I believe that all the dry bulk companies have been hit very hard during the last few months, and all of them are extremely cheap at this point in time. So if there is something that I look at optimistically, is that, you know, we will see sometime a recovery in the dry bulk stocks, because all the companies are undervalued and probably a good entry point.
And I think that's fair. I think that the negative sentiment that we're kind of walking through, and that some of your concerns are absolutely embedded in the stocks, just given, you know, the discounts that a lot of these stocks are trading at on NAVs. With that, everybody, thank you, Nicholas. I see you on the call. I don't know if you have any following remarks, but I can say that there will be a replay of this available on the Capital Link website shortly. Luca, Petter, Stamatis, Aristides, Nicholas, thank you very much.
Thank you to all of you.
Nicholas.
Thank you too.
Nice, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Thank you.